Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Dave Glover Podcast, DGP. As always, me and Rach. This time we're looking out a window.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Right?
Well, we've done one in here before.
Yeah, but this time we're looking out a window.
Yeah, true.
Don't make me look stupid. You know what I love about podcasts? We haven't found our pace yet, but I've been listening to so many lately. And one thing I love about them is most of them, okay, they're two, to me, they're, okay, there are a few kinds of podcasts. One is the very unexperienced person who's just floundering, right? And they're just like, you can feel their energy sweating in your speakers. The other is the professional who's doing a professional broadcast. And then there are the professionals who are just having fun. Mm-hmm. And like Joe Rogan, I guess, has one of the biggest podcasts. And I just recently started listening to him and he's fine. I'm not overly impressed with Joe himself, but he does like a 3-hour podcast with usually just one guest and they just talk. Mm-hmm. And there are these long silences and sometimes it's super boring, but I love it. I do.
I mean, Joe Rogan's podcast seems like the kind of thing that I would be into, but I've just never been able to.
Well, he's a little Joe Rogan for my taste, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's just like, okay, the guy from Fear Factor.
Yeah.
Is he that much smarter than me? Like, I don't understand. And I get he has interesting guests on and whatever, but I've watched like clips from the podcast and they're also always extremely long.
Well, my favorite iteration of Joe Rogan ever is this. Because, you know, again, nothing against Joe Rogan, but I'm just not a giant
fan. What if we just trashed him this whole podcast?
No, but what I'm trying to say is, okay, I guess it's a question that, I mean, we always talk about how Tony and I especially, we hate drama in movies. I used to get nervous in the Flintstones when the boys would go bowling instead of going where they told the girls they're going to go. Like, I don't like it. And so his podcast, especially compared to how he is like on stage and in other television shows, is so laid back and so chill to the point that, yeah, I was listening to this one with comedian Tom Segura today where there are long stretches where they're just watching videos. And we'll always make fun of it. Like if we're watching something on television, like Maury, we're like, oh, this is a great radio. You know, you listening to us watch television, but they did it for like 15 minutes. And I kept listening, like happily. It's just weird. Podcasts are just a weird animal. I'm glad they exist.
Yeah, it's like a new medium for people to experiment with. I think there's a bajillion different kinds. You can turn it into like a drama. Like we both listened to S-Town last year and really enjoyed it. And then you can look like my favorite podcast, Harmontown, is like a live stage show that does comedy and gets serious and has guests and everything. You can do whatever you want with it because it's just spoken word.
Yeah.
So you can turn it into whatever you want it to be.
You know, I started to say people put a lot of work into these things to have very few people ever hear them.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's sort of the social media construct that sometimes. Typically, I don't hear about people who tweet us unless it's something shitty. And when they do, I tend to kind of freak out. And you and Tony will always say, like, Dave, they have 4 followers.
Mm-hmm.
So as I understand it, unless we retweet it, only 4 people at the most are hearing what this person says. And of course, us. That's the big thing. They deliver a message straight to us. But when you like, we'll have thousands of people hear this podcast. That's a lot of people. It's not hundreds of thousands like the show, but it's thousands. But if 10 people were going to hear it, I don't know how much passion I would have for doing it. Because I always hear the stories. It's a big thing with musicians to say, I don't care whether there's 10,000 people in the audience or 2. I'm putting on the same show. Well, I've played for 5,000 people and I've played for 2. And 2 straight up sucks. It's no fun. I wanted to leave. I got nothing out of that but embarrassment.
Yeah, and if you really did like pull out all the stops for 2 people, if I'm one of those 2 people,
it's
I'd be like
for everybody.
Yeah, I'd be like, "Oh, come on. Like we all know what this is. You don't have to do this. You don't have to play the guitar with your teeth tonight."
Man, one of the worst when I was an advertiser and way back when, probably 1998, and this sounds so self-serving, self-back-patty, but I was one of the very first divorce mediators anywhere. And I set up a company called Common Ground Mediation. Isn't that great? What a great name. And we had a great logo and stationery and the whole thing.
That pisses me off because a couple years ago, I remember talking to one of my friends and being like, yeah, when I get a show on 97.1, it's just all going to, because I'm pretty like neutral and I can see both sides of an issue, I feel like. And I was like, and I'm going to call it Common Ground with Rachel Zimmerman. That's bullshit.
That I had it first?
Yeah, that's my Spanx, man.
Sorry.
That's so annoying.
Yeah, I still have, you can have the letterhead. You can just cross out
okay,
mediation.
<thanks. laughs>
But anyway, I was advertising with Steve in D.C. and I was going to do a seminar and bring in 100 people who are interested in divorce mediation. So we rented out one of the rooms in a big hotel
this
in Clayton.
This sounds like a lot of work for you.
Well, I didn't do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, the radio, I was paying for it. So the radio station did it.
Gotcha.
And so I paid quite a bit of money, especially for me because I had none at the time, rented out a big place in Clayton, food, drinks, muffins, the whole bit. They forgot to promote it. Mm. Yeah. They didn't promote it until the day of. And Courtney, on Courtney Company on Y98, was the producer back then. And I remember her saying, like, oh, fuck. And so two guys showed up.
Well, did you get your money back?
No.
That's
lame. I think they gave me, like, make goods or something like that.
That's lame.
But here I am in my little suit. And I realized, because they told me, like, hey, this... But we're really sorry. Steve and DC were there. And so I ended up just going in the corner and talking to these guys and then going to have dinner with Steve and DC.
Aww.
It was awful. Just awful. Anyway, that's why I picture like doing a podcast and 10 people hear it. That really affected you.
I'm just thinking like how bad I would feel if I were in Courtney's position. I've never met Courtney, but you've talked about her before and she seems like pretty on the ball.
Yeah.
I feel like I would like, oh man, just putting myself in that position.
Yeah. No, it
not
was
not good.
It was just one of those things. You know, we've like when we have an event on a Saturday, we'll always say like on Wednesday, okay, we got to hit it.
Well, and we run promos for
it. Yeah, we got to hit it. And they just didn't.
Mm,
it's like a miscommunication. So,
and
bad.
I know how poor you were.
Oh,
I
was so poor.
I guess it's really affecting.
I was so poor.
Oh, hold on. Josh Hawley's office is calling me.
Oh, yay.
Hello?
This is really happening.
Hey, Mary.
Josh Hawley's blowing us off.
Okay, that's totally fine. Thanks for calling me back, Mary. Okay, bye-bye.
Did we get turned down for a date?
We did.
Yeah.
Man, that was hard to take after the whole Steve in D.C. mediation
story. She sounded
nice.
Story.
Yeah, it was nice for her to call me back. Yikes.
I'm a little surprised because I would think Josh Hawley would want all the press he could get.
I understand, but the thing is, so when you texted me to book him this morning, you were like, oh, just have him come on and explain. And it's like, okay, so I said in my messages to these people, like, he doesn't have to take a position. We just want to talk to him. I mean, he already did the press conference, so I'm sure he's, like, dealing with actual work stuff. And then we're like, you should just come on our fun show. And they're like, we do not have time for that.
I don't know. If you're running for Senate, you have time for every show.
I understand. That's why, well, she said at the end of the call, she's like, please keep us in mind for the future. So...
I hate when people say things like that. It's like saying thoughts and prayers. Like, really? What does that even mean? What she should have said, if she really meant it, was, how about if we set something up in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Give me something real. Because keep us in mind in the future. To what? Call you and be turned down again? It's like asking a girl out and she's like, you know what? I'm just not that into you. But keep me in mind for the future. If you need, like, a real blow to your ego, call me again. And I'll say no. Girls.
Got turned down by them and Mike Parson in 15 minutes.
Yeah, man. Don't they know who we are?
I know.
So, can I talk existential like I like to do?
Sure.
So, I was thinking about this because I think about everything. And I'm at that age. I'm at the perfect age where you start looking back, you start looking forward. And having a 23-year-old who's just starting his real human life and a 13-year-old who thinks she is, and I'm very honest with them, and I try to give them all the lessons I feel like my mom and dad did not give me. I was thinking about the degree to which human beings, and I'm going to guess we've done this for tens of thousands of years, but the degree to which most of us, and I'm going to say 95% of people, just get into a path and stay in that path, whether it's a religion or a relationship or a job or a career or a vocation, that we are pathfinders and we are path stickers. Don't you agree? And that's no genius there, but I mean, I feel like 95% of people, there are 5% of people like Francis Mallmann, who we both know, not personally, but he's this crazy funky, he's this crazy Argentinian chef who just purposefully lives on the edge of uncertainty, and he's constantly traveling, and he has babies with gazillions of women, and no one's going to pin me down, and now he's like pushing 70, and he's just, that's the way he's lived his life. Maybe that's 5% of us. 95% of us are looking for the path. We're like in the weeds and we're looking for the path. And I think most of us pick a path way too fast and go, it's a path. I'm going to just stick with this path. Coming from the small town that I did, when you're like 23, maybe it's the same way now, but certainly 30 years ago, growing up in, you know, Madison County, Illinois, when you're 23, 24 and not married, people are like, what's up? What are you doing? Like, what? Why are you such a maverick? It feels crazy now, but it really was. It was just like, yeah, I guess I better get on the stick, huh?
No, I mean, I get it. I'm from Illinois, too, and I'm sure it's not just that, but it's like small town mentality. Most people my age are married. It's getting rarer and rarer to meet people who are like, oh, yeah, I'm not even date. Or like living with someone, you know, like putting down roots in that sense. Whereas I think people my age who live in like New York or something are like, this is like friends. We drink coffee. And
I want that's a great point. I always feel like people in Manhattan are better than us. And they're smarter than us.
Yeah.
And they're living a life and they just want to pee on our heads. Like, you guys just suck. Do you think that's true, or do you think that they're in their own little New York path of life where they're doing the same thing everyone else is? They're just doing it in Manhattan.
I don't know. I feel like, well, especially Manhattan, and it's such an affluent community, like you have to be pretty driven, and probably a lot of people are decently selfish and looking out for themselves, which there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think 23-year-olds are itching to get married as much. I think it's more like, let me establish myself, let me get a really good job and build up for a while. And that, like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know.
I think there's an argument.
Never even been there. So.
I think there's an argument to be made, though, that someone, a 23-year-old Manhattan bond trader, is still a human.
Mm-hmm.
And their jungle that they're looking for a path through is even more jungly than ours. And so I bet it's why, like, I've had many friends move to New York and Chicago, and they always move back. And so I bet that jungle is even more fierce and tiresome after a while. At first, it's fun. Look at me. I'm Magellan, you know? And then you're like, fuck, this is hard. And so you find a person and you move back to wherever you came from, or you move out to the suburbs of New York or something like that. I bet it's pretty similar. And I think one of the hardest things to do for humans is to leave the path. And I think that's why we have vices, whether it's other people in our life or gambling or drinking or Cardinal baseball, whatever it is that we have these little off ramps where we get to feel like, hey, fuck the path. I'm not on the path right now, but you get right back on it. You know, it's like when you get off and you go to QT and you get right back on it. Like, how many people do you know who've really significantly left their path?
I don't know.
Even know about.
I mean, people who are like addicts and stuff. Like, I know people like that. They're pretty far off of a path, but I guess I'm having a hard time following what you're saying.
That's an interesting. I hadn't thought about that. That's an interesting point. What I'm saying is, we're pathfinders. We're afraid of the jungle. We find a path, even if it's kind of a shitty path. We stick with it. We stay on it. We tend, like, homeostasis is everything to us. And for all the memes and all the plaques that people have in their office about, you know, you're never going to see the ocean until you leave the shore and all that kind of stuff, which are all true, no one does it.
I guess, yeah. But unless that becomes your path, like, then it's like, okay, I'm going to, I think a lot of people try, people are unhappy. So then they look at what they're doing and they're like, I don't want to do this. So then they make whatever brash decision to get them out of it as quickly as possible, rip the Band-Aid off. And that's, I think the younger you are, that's the easier that is to do. But the older you get, like, and you send yourself, you rip away that homeostasis and you're just like, okay, now I'm a new person, but I've kind of forgotten how to do that. And it's so scary when really, if you want to change, like, the best way to do that, the metaphor that's coming into my head is so silly, but it's true. It's like if I were to go blonde, I can't go blonde overnight. It's going to take me several months to get a good looking blonde head of hair. And that's what it's like to change your life. Like, you do it in phases and you do it intentionally and you plan it out. You can't just be like, I'm not doing this anymore. And I think that's why a lot of people fail. I think that's why a lot of your friends who have moved to Chicago get up there and they realize they're unhappy. And rather than taking a bunch of steps and slowly building their new life up there, they think, I could just go home to where things were easier. And
so
then they snap
going
back.
With your hair analogy. I'm assuming you could go blonde in an hour,
yeah,
but it would be a terrible
blonde.
It
would look terrible. It would be like yellow, you know. You've seen people with a bad dye job or in between, and you're like, okay, are you going to do something about that?
Yeah.
Or you could get like the pretty platinum blonde, and that's going to take you a while.
And why do you think people don't do that? Why do you think people metaphorically go blonde overnight as opposed to, I'm going to do this intelligently, I'm going to do it for real?
Because I think a lot of times it's based off emotion. It's based off of like, I'm unhappy with this. So, all right, let's do it. Let's go. And it's brash. But if you know in your heart that what you need to do is change and what you need to do is work on yourself, then you can kind of take it step by step and realize like, okay, I'm not going to be able to snap my fingers and become a new person. I'm going to fail and I'm going to have to get back up and keep trying.
The guy I had on, the Paradox of Choice guy, really had an impact on me. And we've talked about this in the show before. One of the things he said, that it's based on studies that I found so true, is that if you're going to make a decision, whether it's buying a sweater, getting a divorce, or moving to Bali, is make a decision that's really hard to take back. Because if you leave yourself an escape hatch, most people take it. And until they do, they're miserable. That if you say, hey, Dave, here are two sweaters, pick one. And by the way, you can bring it back anytime you want and get the other one. Most people will take that blue sweater home and think about the red sweater. As opposed to if you just say, like, pick one, but you got to live with it. Studies show that most people make a choice and they're happy because they know they can't take it back. And that's more difficult in life because almost everything can be taken back. And you don't want to hurt people and be like, well, I'm going to crash this relationship so bad that there's no way she'll ever take me back.
Yeah.
But
man, I keep bringing this to like the most shallow way possible, but I watch a reality show called Vanderpump Rules. And this season on Vanderpump Rules, Jax has been cheating on his girlfriend, Brittany, but she won't leave him. They're in a horrible codependent relationship. He obviously hates his life. He doesn't want to be in it, but he doesn't want to be the bad guy to break up with a girl he cheated with on TV. So last night, as I was watching, he was like, hey, I don't want to do this. Like, I feel like a bad person. I feel like you deserve to be treated like a princess, and I can't be that person, and you should find someone who will do that for you. And she was like, what? How can you do this to me? You know, normal reaction for someone who's been emotionally abused. And
but she knows about the cheating
because
she can watch it on TV.
She knows about all of it. And she's clinging to it because she doesn't want to change. She still wants to be on TV. He's her gateway to being on TV.
Oh, so he's the TV guy.
Right.
So she'll be gone.
But I think up until, like, kind of all season, this has been going on, but he's been doing it in ways where it's like, maybe she'll break up with me first. Maybe she'll break up with me first. And I think that's less about, I don't want to hurt this person, because obviously he already hurt her. I think it's more like, I don't want her to see me as the bad guy forever. I can't take that loss.
I think a lot of it also has to do with regret. And I think most people are like this, and I think I'm a lot like this, that if a decision is made for you, for example, our company, like 3 months ago, we were working at MS Communications, going along fat and happy, everything's great. And then one day we find out, hey, you've been sold to a company called Intercom.
And MS St. Louis doesn't exist anymore. That was the big thing for me.
Yeah.
It forced me to move on.
So if they were still over there and they just sold us, but they kept the other three stations.
It'd be really hard for me to take. Yeah. I think it'd be harder. I might have tried to stay in the building. I don't know.
There you go.
I probably would have come with 97.1, but I definitely would have thought about it.
And would that have been just because it was the devil you know?
That's the only radio station I've ever been gainfully employed at, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I know.
Yeah.
And now we're over here, and this is fine. This is, there are pros to this that didn't exist at MS. There are cons. But knowing, like, I can't go back helps me move forward.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And I think that analogy holds for marriages and careers and moving out of the country, kids looking at colleges and saying, like, I really want to go to Tulane, but my mom and dad both went to Mizzou and they're going to freak out. It's tough. And I don't think I like taking responsibility. And part of it, let me just be completely honest and shitty. Part of not wanting to take responsibility is I don't want to hurt other people. But a lot of it is I don't want to feel the regret. Like, if I do this, man, and I'll go even shittier and smaller. I don't want to look stupid. That I'm sort of held up as this example of bravery that I left the practice of law in 2000 when I was 36 years old, and now I built this little miniature dynasty in radio, and everyone's like, wow, you're so brave, and you had the balls to this and that. And I think even I've begun to believe that a little bit. And the truth is, I was so fucking unsuccessful, and it was all just on fire. It was just a forest fire of a career, and this presented itself, and I latched onto it, and I just got lucky. It just worked out. So, but had I had a successful law firm and was making money?
Yeah, you wouldn't have jumped in like
Yeah, no. Yeah, so there's another metaphor that when you're jumping off a sinking ship, you tend to do pretty good work at finding a big log to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it makes sense.
And so had I had a thriving law practice, and then someone said, why don't you go do a radio show for free? One, I would have been stupid. But even if this were my passion and I knew it and I thought I could really make a go of this, I would have, the number one reason I wouldn't have done it, well, hopefully the number one reason is I had a small child. But put that aside. It honestly would have been, this may not work out and I'm going to regret it. And I'm mostly going to regret looking stupid.
Yeah.
Isn't that dumb?
And even beyond looking stupid is like the guilt of like, but I've been blessed with this law career. Like, how ungrateful am I going to look if I run and jump and do this other thing? And then if it doesn't work out, I look stupid and I squandered my opportunity and I wasted my chance at life.
Yeah. And I think people feel that way about leaving relationships and even moving law firms. You know, you can go small ball. That it can be, well, I'm going to stay a lawyer, but I'm going to go from the defense side to the plaintiff side. And then you feel the same emotions, like you're going to look like a fucking idiot.
Every time we get an email that's like such and such from like back when we worked with MS, such and such salesperson from KPNT has left the company to pursue sales with blank. I'm always like, what? You looked for it. You didn't get fired. Like, you went and looked for a new job, and yeah. You're like, to me, I think a lot of people who work in media are like, well, I have to stick with this because yeah. If I leave, I'm not going to be able to get back into
the
industry. Yeah. And then when they do it, I'm just like, you are so different than me. I guess you don't have the same fear as I do.
Well, this is the last year of my contract. My contract is up, I think, like March 19th of 2019. And as everyone knows, we're with a new company. We've had big changes, you know. And so I'm in that position again. And in a real way. I've had, every time my contract has been up, I've been very blessed and fortunate. And I've had offers. And I've never taken them. One was I felt very romantic about MS. Two, they took good care of me. And three, the whole like homeostasis, I'd never dated anyone else. They're my only girlfriend. Well, now that's done. They broke up with me. I'm gone. I'm with a new girlfriend who I don't know very well. And some shit has gone down so far, right? In our first few weeks with this new company. So now when I get offers for the first time, I'm really going to look at them. Like, I will really look at these offers. Like, okay, because my new company has no loyalty to me. And they shouldn't. I'm a brand new guy. They don't know me. But I have no real loyalty to them. Yeah. I haven't even met them. I haven't shaken a hand, you know? So this year is going to be that year for me.
Yeah. And you don't have the level of doubt that you would have had with MS who you were with for 18 years.
Yeah.
I just almost knocked my headphones off. Can I just say something? So Sean Hannity is Michael Cohen's like third unnamed client. Every headshot they use of him is not accurate. They use something from like 10 years ago where he's 40 pounds thinner. Have you noticed this? The Sean Hannity you see on TV is very different than the Sean Hannity you get in photos.
He's quite walrusy.
Yes, and that's not reflected in his headshots, and it's false advertising, and it's starting to really piss me off.
Wouldn't they use the most unflattering photo they could find?
I don't get it. I don't get it.
I got angry at Tim Elwell the other day. Did you see I threw those away?
No, I wanted to keep one.
Fuck that, no. Someone, I think a friend of yours, asked for...
No, it was a listener wants to send a signed headshot of you to their parents because their parents are huge fans for their anniversary.
And so you asked Tim Elwell, and he pulled some shit out from 2005.
It's your Phil Collins headshot.
Yeah, it is. I still had my hair, and I was fat. And
man, I wish you wouldn't have thrown those away.
Oh, I'm sure they weren't the last two. I hope they are, but I'm sure they're not.
Those were like some quality headshots.
Shut up. Yeah, they were very like...
And you were like, I look great.
Shut up. No.
I bet you thought you did.
No.
I think you look fine.
You always do. You always say that. You, other than Sean Hannity, you never say someone looks bad. You're always like, I don't know. I can see it. Can I tell my ninth grade baseball story before we go?
I guess.
God, you don't give a shit.
Go for it. No, it's fine.
Oh, my life is defined by this right now. Between you and Phoebe. So unimpressed.
I just sat here and talked to you for 30 minutes.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell your story. Maybe you'll get something out of this, Rachel Zimmerman. You probably heard me tell it before. But it was such a... It was my original analogy. It's why I became the king of analogies. So I played baseball in the Roxana system forever. And when I was in ninth grade... The coach for the varsity baseball team, Coach Rach, who is a god, called me at home. Get this. And he was like, Glover.
As opposed to your cell.
Glover, it's Coach Rach. And I've been watching you play, and you're a real good ball player, and I want you to come play for my team. You'll be playing with seniors, and it'll be good for your career. And I'm like, okay, well, like what I... play because I was a little stud on my little team, my age appropriate team. And he's like, well, you'll play and you'll sit the bench, but you're gonna be a much better player when you get into high school. And I'm like, you know what, coach, thanks, it's a great offer, but I think I'm gonna stick with my team. And he's like, okay, it's a giant mistake, but okay,
you'll regret this.
And so I did. I stayed with my team, and I like hit 800 and stole a million bases and just regretted it. And every time I saw him, because then he was my coach in the future for things and my PE teacher, and he always liked me and remembered me. But I always felt shame. Like every time I saw him, I felt like he's just thinking like, you fucking little pussy. Had you like come and played with me? So anyway, but I remember that phone call. I remember where I was standing in my mom and dad's house and talking to him and feeling like the president had called me. And like I had to make a decision. I couldn't like sleep on it. It was, hey, practice starts tomorrow. Are you going to play with your little pussy ninth grade, you know, friends? Are you going to come play with a bunch of grown ass 18-year-old men with hair in their balls? And I'm like, I'm going to stay with my pussy friends. Thank you very much. Damn it. I still regret it. Why can't I go back and play for Coach Rach?
I'm sorry.
You didn't like my story. Tell me what you learned from it.
It fits in perfectly with today's theme. You were like, man, I can't leave my team. I've got a good thing going on here. You weren't planning for your future self, and 40 years later, you still regret it.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? It was a fear-based decision.
Yeah.
It truly was. It was, well, I don't want to ride the bench, and I don't want to like get hit by people throwing real fastballs. I'd rather be a stud down here in Dorkland. That's been my life, though. There's no way you can't take this as an insult, but I've always been king of the nerds. And so, like, in my neighborhood, bunch of nerdy kids, I was the coolest one. And rather than trying to find another group of friends where I would be the least cool one, but I'd be in the popular crowd, I always said, no. No, always.
These are my people.
These, yes. I'm going to be your king.
Wait, why would I take that as an insult?
No reason. Someday.